Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, 548 for comics originally released on February 7th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Deathstroke number 28. This is written by Christopher Priest, and sometimes I like his writing, sometimes I don't. And this is one where the writing just didn't quite work for me in a couple of ways. And I don't know if I was just have my mind on other stuff or what, but it really kind of felt like this issue jumped around a bit from scene to scene.
Just a bit.
Okay, so it's not my imagination.
It is not.
Okay.
No. I was thinking of, there used to be the old time variety show reruns that I'd watch at my grandmother's, and there was a plate spinner who would start spinning a plate
yes.
and then have to move to the other and then move to the other, but then he'd have to run back to that first plate and keep it from falling off. And that's what I felt when I was reading this. I was like, oh, this is a little section of the story. Oh, now we're going to jump over here. Now we're going to jump over here. We better get back to this thing. And like that can work, I guess. But I too felt like there was a little too much jumping.
I counted at least 14 jumps in time and space, not counting all the ones in like those rapid fire flashbacks we got a time or two. And This issue footnoted at least 9 different previous issues of this title.
Yeah, there was a lot of them.
And, I mean, there's a lot of story going on, but I think your analogy of the spinning plates is a really good one. And it's like there's almost too many stories to be told in this, and a lot of them are around not Deathstroke, but his family. Either it's Wintergreen, or it's his wife, or it's Joey, Jericho, or it's Rose. And not that Deathstroke doesn't show up. He shows up quite a bit and has a lot going on. But, like, after this last arc, which, in theory, I think this was kind of closing out with the whole Defiance stuff with that team, they were just completely tossed to the side in the annual last week or the week before. I mean, I just read that before reading this. And it was, like, literally one character wakes up, and in the span of, like, going down for breakfast or something, everything falls apart for the team. She basically, you know, ostracizes everybody. It was amazing, and it was very much like, okay, we're done with the story, let's disperse these characters we don't need and focus back on what we want to tell. And I think if you had missed that annual, you might come into this thinking, what happened to them? Or if you'd been liking that previous arc, which had Kid Flash and Power Girl, and in fairness, most of the other team members of Defiance, Jericho, Rose, and Terra, are longtime Deathstroke characters. So they kind of stick around because they would have anyways. But I just was unimpressed by the disjointedness. The art didn't particularly wow me. And there was an almost Liefeld-esque quality to it in places where proportions and perspective and stuff didn't feel quite right. Not, oh my god, you've got to be kidding me, but enough that it didn't help the story either. But I couldn't tell how much of that was just, I kept getting kind of thrown out of the story by the jumping around that the writing had.
Yeah, the team of Diogenes Neves is the penciler with Trevor Scott on inks. I thought there were some really nice panels, but I can definitely see where there may have been some problematic areas for you. But all in all, I thought the art was not the problem. It was more writing for me and I'd heard a lot of good things about Deathstroke. It was an Eisner-nominated DC series, which in recent history, there haven't been very many of those.
When was it Eisner-nominated? Last year? Or?
Yeah, the last cycle through.
Okay.
And so, you know, wow, Deathstroke got nominated for an Eisner for best series. That's really saying something. And so, you know, I keep attempting to hop on sporadically since then. And I haven't found that, whatever that is, that other people are finding in this. And it's just this issue in particular with all the jumping around. And I don't know if the plot really moved forward from the beginning to the end because of all that jumping around. And it for me, it just didn't have a hook. It didn't pull me in, and it didn't make me want to come back. I was a little disappointed in it.
Well, I think any movement it may have had, again, goes in that spinning kind of a metaphor where they are reminding us of plot lines, but I would agree, it didn't feel like anything moved substantially forward. And I think that's problematic because you can't just keep teasing, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, or whatever, and never really move the story forward. I also just have some conceptual problems with one or two of the things they've been doing with the character in this run, and I think some of that predates Christopher Priest. This whole icon suit or whatever that is giving Deathstroke and the four or five other people who have similar suits, you know, various powers, be it a flight or increased invulnerability or what have you. The Deathstroke, I remember pre-Flashpoint and such, he didn't need any of that. He was just that good.
Yeah, or the ones that we're reminded of in Green Arrow, you know, mm-hmm. that we're seeing on television regularly, it doesn't really line up.
Yeah. Well, and this version of Jericho is so unlike the classic Wolfman Perez version that it is just appalling at times.
I do like the practice of crediting creators for their contributions. Deathstroke created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. I think those are nice touches. I don't know that they do them consistently, and I think they must pick and choose who they honor with those, or are forced to through litigation. I'm not sure.
I don't think it's litigation, at least in the case of Wolfman Perez. Certainly the agreement.
I was thinking of the Superman, the Siegel Schuster stuff down there. Well, that looks like a lawyer wrote that.
I was going to comment on that, because the reason that's in there is because we have new Superman, not even the Clark Kent Superman.
Yeah.
And it's like those guys didn't create the current Chinese guy that we've got in as the new Superman.
No.
So to me, them getting credit for derivative work, now granted, we wouldn't have had this new Superman without the other one, but the point is we had the other Superman for 75 plus years, 76, 78 or whatever, before we got this new Superman. The only thing they really borrowed was the name and the rough power set, but you could argue that's become iconic. I like it when they do that, but then there's so many other characters in here that they could have also credited somebody with having created.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what the line is, and what rises to the occasion of this character was created by this person. And but it always seems usually a nice touch when they add it.
I would hazard to guess that the line is title character. And or okay. One of the big dogs, the Trinity, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, or something of that sort. That's what I would suspect, but I honestly haven't given it a whole lot of thought and really noticed where and when they credit characters, again, like Superman here, that I wouldn't have otherwise expected.
Who do they credit Wonder Woman to?
The creator of it, William, I forget his name.
Okay. They do credit him then. Okay.
I thought so. And that one also may be contractual, because my understanding is they have the rights to retain the rights to Wonder Woman so long as they do 4 issues a year featuring the character, which these days sounds like a laughably low number. Keep in mind that was probably agreed upon at least before the 80s, that much I'm certain of. And at one point there was a Legend of Wonder Woman miniseries that lasted 4 issues between, this was around the time of Crisis, between the previous run and before the Perez run started, and that was to guarantee they got the number of issues out that year to retain the rights to the character.
And those were the only 4?
I don't think they were the only 4. I just don't remember the exact timing, because this would have been 84, 85-ish.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's calendar year or rolling 12 months.
Don't know. I'm sure there's a lawyer who could tell you.
Maybe. That's crazy.
Yeah. Speaking of the new Superman, he was in here having blatantly announced his intent to go after Deathstroke, because, of course, that's how, you know, you do international things. You're on, what, a ferry going across the river or whatever and announce it or something? I don't know. It's crazy. What I did find interesting, although consequential, is he is in not his current outfit. In one of the stories a few months ago, I think it was December, his costume changed a little to an S that was almost more of a yin-yang kind of symbol or whatever. So I don't know if that's dating the story as having happened prior to it, or if this artist just didn't get the memo that the costume was slightly different. Either way, it doesn't really matter, but it was something I noticed.
Yeah, so you've been reading this the whole time and previous iterations as well. How does this stack up for you versus other Deathstrokes of the past?
Low on the rankings.
Okay.
In terms of, there have been other runs that I thought were much, much better. And this, between kind of that spinning plates and the art in some places was good, other places I thought very, it's like, wow, that they, it felt like it was shortcutted there or something. This is not a title I would recommend. I like the character, but frankly, if I wasn't a longtime fan of Deathstroke and related characters like Terra and Jericho and Rose and stuff, this could be a pretty easy title for me to cut. It's not one that, you know, like you said, it didn't hook you, and I don't think it would hook most people. It's not so bad that I feel, oh, I've got to drop the title or something, but I would certainly be game if they got a better creative team, or at least one more to my liking. Let me phrase it that way. These guys aren't doing a bad job. It's just not really working for me.
Yeah. Makes me question the Eisner process a little. But maybe there was a run that last year that really was amazing, and I don't know. I'm not seeing it here. And this issue, not even though it's a first issue of a story arc, it's not one I would recommend and hand to someone to say, here, check this out. You'll get a good sense of whether you want to read this title or not. So kind of a bummer of a jumping on point, and definitely a jumping off point for me. I think I'm going to go with a D+.
I can understand that. I think it was a first part of a story, but more really first part of a chapter, because this was definitely picking up on the heels of past events. So I think DC's been fudging the part one aspect a bit. I'm going to go with a C- on this. Like I said, it's not the worst thing I've ever read. It didn't really connect with me, and I think if they were to focus the storytelling, that would be advantageous for the title, but they're going to do what they're going to do. And I think it was definitely a different creative team that probably got that Eisner nominee. But even when they had like the crossover with the Titans and stuff, where I thought it was much better than this, I wouldn't have said it was the best thing coming out from DC, much less all of comics or something. So I don't know that I'd have gone with the Eisner nominee for it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me question their process.
Yeah.
A lot of good DC stuff. And to select this one, I don't know.
I wish there was something that the judges would do to elucidate their thinking on this, as to we thought it deserved it because, not just, hey, it won, because maybe they saw something in a particular story arc or a particular aspect of it that either is escaping my memory right now or I just didn't feel the same way on. But, yeah.
Yeah, you never know what it takes to get in the shortlist.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes.
This is X-Men Red number 1, because we need, apparently, another X-Men team. I was going through doing the number crunching this weekend for the January numbers, and there was some reorder activity on X-Men Blue and Gold that got me looking at the titles. And what I noticed is X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold, and Weapon X, and I think Astonishing X-Men are all selling at roughly the same numbers, which I'm thinking 40,000 range. I could be off. I'm doing that from memory. My point being, there's no clear flagship for the X-Men franchise right now, and here they are tossing in another X-Men book. And this one, of course, featuring the recently resurrected Jean Grey and some other characters. And overall, I like this. Tom Taylor, I think, is a very talented writer. But there were a few kind of writing conventions, crutches, call them what you will. You know, hey, let's start with an opening scene of the X-Men rescuing a mutant. And then let's cut to 2 months earlier and kind of build up to how we got here. as if you need to build up to why a mutant in the Marvel Universe needs rescuing. It's kind of just the way it is.
You know, and I'm a little more forgiving of those if they connect the dots by the end of the issue, but they didn't seem to get back to where we were when they went back. So I guess that the whole story arc will be getting us back to that 2 months later. Was that your take?
That makes, I mean, yeah, they didn't connect at the end of this. If it takes 6 issues to find out who Heather is and why we should care, like maybe, I don't know, what her powers are or something, I'm going to be a little disappointed by that. And there were a couple of other characters that show up, specifically Gentle and Trinary, that I'm assuming are not having been seen before characters. I hesitate to use the term that they're new mutants, because that's a different team. I didn't recognize them. I don't know if we've seen them before or not, but all they do in this issue is, at the end of that opening sequence, stand there heroically. And it's like, is it going to take us that long to circle back and find out what's going on? But there were a couple of moments here that I really liked. There was one or two moments that I thought were particular groaners, like the name of their headquarters.
Yeah.
Of
the Cerebro?
Cerebro with C-S-E-A, Erebro, or Rebro, or whatever. And I'm like, I can't even do this verbally. It's one that I think would work better. I was going to do a seriously kind of a thing on it, but I don't know, the whole thing with playing on the name of Cerebro, but doing the pun on the C because they're underwater 3,000 feet down or whatever, it's like, and they've apparently just bamfed in there with Nightcrawler. It's like, I'm not sure that's quite how his powers work with line of sight and all of that, but hey, let's ignore all of that that's been, you know, established continuity and whatnot for a few decades.
Now, that's the first time we've seen Cerebro,
yes,
as a underwater fortress, because I don't remember seeing it anywhere.
Brand new as far as I know.
Okay.
I don't recall seeing it before.
I thought that was a really interesting reveal, and I was excited to see more of it, and then we didn't. I thought the United Nations and political aspect of this was fun. I liked, you know, getting the votes ahead of time and shoring up support from some cool characters. I enjoyed that a lot. And then the whole motion and working through the bureaucracy, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was fun. And you know, the unfortunate turn at the end that kind of set everything back and derailed the whole plan that she had. You know, that was a really good move and worked really well on the page. And so I think there's a lot of fun stuff in here, and I really like a lot of the characters. They work well together. There's tons of great stuff in here to like, and I find that a lot of it's working really well and working well together.
I would agree with that. The whole United Nations bit when Jean addressed them, I thought that was really well done. I was surprised by that because the comic was billed as, you know, this team will use any means necessary. And I'm like, wow, a diplomatic approach. They are going with any means necessary. I mean, I didn't see that coming, but having both Atlantis and Wakanda recognize this mutant nation, whatever that's going to be, I thought was very interesting. It made sense. I'm curious where they're going with this, because they seem to be going in a different direction than let's have everybody live together in Genosha or whatever. The events afterwards, particularly with that UK ambassador, when she was talking to Jean, as that was happening, I'm like, I think I know who's pulling some strings here, and I was right a few pages later. It was a cool reveal, and it's one of those things, though, that when you're dealing with the X-Men, you've got to expect public opinion is going to drastically change against the X-Men on rapid notice. I mean, they should have danger room maneuvers around that by this point. It happens so often. In this case, it was incredibly well kind of orchestrated and whatnot. And again, artfully done, both literally on the art, but also story-wise. This is going in some different directions than I think the X-Men have done before, or at least a different way of telling similar sorts of stories, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yeah. And I think some of the other team members are good team members. I really like Nightcrawler. I really like All New Wolverine, and I like Honey Badger a lot. They didn't get a lot of time in this, and didn't play major roles, but I can see them getting a little more screen time in future issues. But I thought they were used well in limited fashion, and it's a team that I like, and so like more parts of it than maybe I do the blue and the, what's the other one, gold.
Blue and gold, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm hoping if this series continues as this first issue, that this can be my X team book again, because I've been without one for a while. And so I'm looking forward to the next issue, and I hope it's as good and strong as this issue is, because I thought this was really good.
I would agree story-wise, this is really strong. I thought the art could have been a little better, but it certainly told the story very effectively. I think with this lineup of mutants, it's hard to consider this the flagship X-book, but I think they may be trying to position Astonishing X-Men that way, just failing to do so.
Yeah.
But I do like this lineup. I'm curious particularly if Trinary and Gentle are going to become members, if they're going to become meaningful members or what. I was kind of expecting the other Jean Grey to show up here, but it makes sense kind of that she didn't. But not having any other kind of core X-Men, if you will, because Wolverine, this is the new one, not the original. It's not even Old Man Logan, for that matter. But we don't have any of the more iconic, I mean, Nightcrawler being the exception, of course. He's a longtime X-Men, starting
no
with
Beast,
giant size.
No Beast, no Cyclops, no Colossus, yeah.
Or Storm, or, yep. You know, I mean, Kitty Pryde, Rogue, Gambit. I mean, there's probably another dozen you could list that would be considered kind of primary X-Men, if you will.
And do you think that's something Marvel is doing deliberately by putting these different teams together with maybe an iconic character or two, and seeing and how the teams shake out, what fan response is, what sales response is for these, and then making a decision for what the new flagship is going to be after Wolverine returns, after that long miniseries, whenever that happens?
I don't think they're that data driven, but I could be wrong. I think they're just picking different mixes of characters to see what happens, but if they've got a solid game plan for this, it eludes me.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hope that there's something to be learned from these. 'Cause I don't know if Astonishing Gold and Blue are going to last. They have end game. Have they been announced as when they're going to end yet? Any of those?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not yet, but I can't imagine that they're going to continue like this, especially once Wolverine returns. I would think there'd be one. I would think they would try at least one big unifying title to capitalize on longtime X-Men fans and folks that want to see that.
I would expect at some point they'll do kind of what they're doing with the Avengers, merge them, go weekly for a few months, and then split them back out. But even splitting them back out, the X-Men Blue is essentially Young X-Men, and that's been going on for a good couple of years now. So I think they can run with this long term. I don't know that they should.
So X-Men Blue is kind of like the all new X-Men title.
It's the time displaced group.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Was that all new X-Men, or was that Young X-Men? Or
I think that was all new X-Men.
Maybe it was all new X-Men. There's so many X titles, and they shuffle them every so often. It's hard to keep track.
It is very challenging to keep track of who's who and who's on what team and who is which is supposed to be the premier title, which one is supposed to do the heavy lifting. I don't know.
I would expect it to be Astonishing right now, but sales wise, it's almost indistinguishable from the others. I think they need to shore up the X-Men line. I mean, they're telling decent stories in some cases, but the sales just aren't there, and I think a lot of it is because there isn't an X-Men title. You want X-Men, there's now three flavors of X-Men. You know, just with X-Men as the start of the title.
Do you have a clear favorite for yourself?
I've tended to be enjoying probably Weapon X the most out of them. After that, I would probably say Blue, and then it's a bit of a toss-up between Gold and Astonishing.
Okay.
I'll tell you right now, if I were over at the XR office, the change I would make is I would add Jamie Madrox, the multiple man, to the team. And by which I mean each of the teams. Hey, he could do it. He could be in multiple places at once. Why not? This was a fun issue. It's got a lot of promise. I think Tom Taylor's got a lot he can do with the X-Men, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Like I said, this is a different approach to some of the classic X-Men kind of problems or whatever, and I want to see where he goes with it. For me, it was a very solid B, and it's one I would recommend people check out.
Yeah, I think story's king here. I think Tom Taylor did a really good job of hooking me, bringing me into this. This is something that I would recommend to others to sample and check out if they're interested in an X book to try. Definitely something that I think has a good foundation going forward. So I'm going to go, I'm right on the B+, A- range. I think you're right about the art, though. So I'm going to go with the B+. It's still a really good read and a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's one that if they had gotten, you know, like a John Cassaday or some other really, you know, top-notch artist, this is one that could have instantly become almost the flagship book for, you know, a little bit maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. I'm curious. It's just I was surprised when I looked at the X-Men sales numbers how they were all almost right next to each other and again at that 40,000-ish level. I forget exactly where.
Yeah, because historically, you know, there should be an X book in the top 10. You know, there should be always be a Spidey up there. There should always be an Avengers book up there in my head. In my idealized version of what should be selling, those three should have a premier book that sells really well.
Well, in the past, when we've had a clear flagship title and then the other books in the franchise, there's always been that one that's selling head and shoulders above the rest. You know, you would have Batman, and then you would have Legends of the Dark Knight. You would have, you know, other yep. Batman flavors, but it's clear. Well, there's Batman. Or you would have X-Men and you would have peripheral titles, you know, X-Factor, X-Force, whatever. X-Men would be the top seller. You'd have like Green Lantern and then you'd have Green Lantern Corps or some other stuff. But now it's unclear where the lead character is. Isn't the flagship book? The flagship book doesn't have quite the pull and therefore it's not the flagship book. And this is, I think, why a lot of people are saying there's simply, you know, too many comics coming out. There's a plethora of choices and no clear this is the one you ought to be getting. So we'll see what they do. I think, you know, with them announcing Wolverine coming back and all that at some point, every year or two, we get a pretty good shakeup on how the teams are aligned with the X-Men. And that'll probably be the next major shakeup of that sort.
Will this be every 2 weeks as well?
I am not sure. It would not surprise me. Matter of fact, I'd be a little surprised if it was not. And what that means is we may get a different artist on the next arc, just because I would imagine they'd need to kind of swap them out every other arc.
Yeah, and that might be an improvement.
Could be. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is Versus Number 1 from Image. It is by Ivan Brandon and Isad Ribic on art. And this is one that I've got kind of mixed feelings on.
Did you pre-order this, or is this a sample from the PDF?
A sample from the PDF.
Okay.
And it was one that I looked at and I considered getting, but just didn't pull the trigger on. And having read the press PDF, I'm kind of okay with that. Because, I mean, the art is exactly what I expected out of Isad Ribic.
Yes.
But the story, it didn't connect with me. And I don't know, I mean, part of it was the way it started was really slow and quiet, and I don't mean like in a wordless sense, but you know, you've got these people. There's as you find out, what, 5 pages in before we actually see anybody, they're waiting. They're apparently in a war zone or whatever, and it takes like 5, 6, 7 pages before we really get things starting to happen. And I'm like, okay, you've got I don't know how many pages this was, 20-ish or something. And you've just spent at least a quarter of it with a slow tease. And I'm like, man, you've got to get me hooked in this first issue, and that's not doing it. And then we get this battle, and I'm not sure why they're fighting, who they're fighting, and what's going on. And it looks like they're pretty much getting toasted. And then we get this bizarre thing happen, this vid error, and we get a 3-minute war delay. I'm like, I'm not quite sure I'm understanding what's going on there. And this is where I started to get a little bounced out of the story in terms of they've got an idea here, but I'm not following because they haven't really explained. And then we start getting the captions for the TV coverage equivalent, the ads and some other stuff like that. And I get these are in-world and it's supposed to be giving us flavor and whatnot. Didn't add to the story for me. And then we get to one point. And then I hit this flip to the next page, and suddenly we're elsewhere, else when. And I'm like, when did this guy get injured? I assume that's the guy I was just looking at, but he seemed fine there. I guess something happened afterwards. It just kind of threw me out of the story.
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit confused. I mean, I guess it's some kind of televised war show of some sort that, and you know, it's bloody and it's violent, but you know, you can't violate the rules of it, or even though you kill the other guy, you still are disqualified from the match or something. I guess that there's kernels of stuff that could be interesting, but unfortunately the execution is so unclear really what's going on that I wasn't able to really enjoy it. There were like little pieces of things like, I guess this could be interesting, but I don't really get this story well enough to know who everybody is and what exactly is happening in this world and what is this world. I mean, you didn't really do a good job of building this for me. And the art is quintessential Aesop Ribic. It's very nice in places and really fully rendered and detailed and lovely, but that's only half the battle. And unfortunately, I don't think the writing is anywhere near the level of the art. And I was kind of lost and not in a, there's so much cool stuff here, I'll get it later. It just lost me and never really hooked me throughout. And it was kind of disappointing because I had higher hopes for this.
Well, yeah, it was one of those things where, again, the art, I don't think was falling down on the job, but some of the storytelling decisions of, okay, let's flip from one character to another as if we're flipping, you know, channels on the TV screen or what player view we're watching or whatever. It made it harder to follow the story. There are rules to this game, but we're completely in the dark on it. And it may be something that as we get more uncovered and revealed or whatever, it may make more sense. I don't know that it's really going to get the chance for that because it's a rough market out there. And I think a lot of people are potentially going to read it and say, I don't get it. I didn't follow. Why should I come back? And I didn't feel there was any character that I was connected enough to make me kind of, well, I want to see what happens to that guy. You know, I was disappointed.
Yeah, this is one of these where I'm sure Eric Stevenson greenlights this because Aesop Ribic is attached to it. And well, yeah, if he wants to do a creator owned, let him do it here. And not going to worry too much about what the content is. And that can sometimes be awesome, and sometimes it can miss its mark pretty badly. And I think this is a miss, and I don't think it's going to connect with a lot of readers. I don't think it's just you and I. I really think there's some definite storytelling that's missing here, for a first issue, for accessibility, for fun. It's just not in this book, and not something that I think a lot of people will say, I just can't wait to read the next issue. I don't think there's anything here to bring you back.
Yeah, I was following or watching the events, but I couldn't follow the story. And that it's the story that brings you back from issue to issue. Maybe it's going to connect to people, but it'd be one of those again. I wouldn't fully understand why.
Yeah, I actually pre-ordered this, but I only pre-ordered the first issue. Pre-ordered the first issue just to check it out and see if it was something for me. And it's clearly not. I think the art does. If for people that love art, you know, you're gonna be well rewarded here, but you're gonna be lacking in the story. So I'm gonna go with a C-, and just not for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's if it wasn't for the art, I probably would have gone lower.
Yeah,
But again, Esad Ribic does great work, but I just wish it was a story that had more to it.
Yeah.
I also found one or two things on the text page at the interesting, the back, kind of interesting and almost laughable on just how hard it was for them to coordinate the schedules and get this out, because I mean the writer, he's so busy with his day job over at Paramount Studios, and Esad, he's got this big event over at Marvel, another one with Louis Vuitton and this other stuff. They're just so busy, you know. And I'm like, are you trying to get sympathy out of us? And this is one of those where it's not all the time, but more often than I guess I care for, I'll get a first issue that has the, this is what it took for us to pull this together, I hope you guys love it, and invariably is not followed too long afterwards, or followed not too long afterwards, with the, oh, this was a passion project, we're so sorry it's ending, but, you know, it just didn't work or whatever. There's a little of kind of the award acceptance speechness to some of these back pages at times that I just find humorous. It didn't used to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fan letters. Some still do that.
Few and far between, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually essays. Well, a lot of essays now.
Yeah.
Which are fine sometimes, you know, Lazarus essays are pretty cool. Brubaker essays are pretty cool. BKV does great back matter. But I don't know. Some of them fall well short of that.
Yeah. So last time we talked a little about duplicate picks on the preview spotlight. Since then, I've actually edited the preview spotlight. We did indeed have some duplicate picks. We had, I don't know, 5, maybe 6 items that we had 2 clips on. Because the discussion had kind of started after people had sent in clips and whatnot, I decided for this time I'll leave them all in, because hey, it takes time to do a clip and all that, and I wouldn't want somebody to feel their time was wasted or anything.
Yeah.
But I did put up a poll as a thread on the forum to get some input on this. With a whole bunch of different options, everything ranging from, you know,
pay to play.
Whoever bribes me the most, they get in.
I like that.
And then there was the only use mine if you have to. If you've got no other choice, use it. But otherwise, whoever else, you know, or you just, yeah, I was trying to have some fun with it. But so far, as when we record this on Tuesday the 13th, the clear winner is just leave them all in, which is kind of my inclination anyways. But again, I'll leave the thread and the poll up there for a bit. And I was very upfront in the poll that it's a non-binding commitment for me because I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And there have been a couple of times where we get 2 or 3 clips and it's that third one that convinces me. And there are other times it's like they're saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do see that other people have the same clip and, you know, if all you guys do is just read the solicit and it's done 3 times, that's probably not going to convince anybody. But most of the clips have more of a here's why I'm getting it and a why they think you should get it, and not just reading the solicit, which I appreciate because I believe it or not, I can read. But what I don't do is follow all the interviews or have everybody's personal background on the title as to why they think I should be getting this, that, or the other. And it's just there's so many comics coming out. I mean, you had posted on the Slack channel how I forget which creator it was saying, yeah, there's like 200 a week or 200. Was he saying a month?
He said there's nearly 200 books released a month. And I said, yeah, from the big two, there's nearly 200. But, you know, beyond that, there's 800, you know, in a month. And that's probably an average. It's probably higher than that sometimes.
I don't know. I actually haven't done that count because I would discount, you know, obviously variants or whatever. But yeah, I'm getting 200 a month and I'm not getting everything. Not by a wide margin. And particularly if you include the back half of previews, as you well should, if it's below 700-800, I'd be surprised. I don't know if it would top out over 1,000 on an average month, maybe these days. I don't know how far back that would go.
Yeah.
But
I think Comicron tallies items shipped, and I think that's where I pulled that number from. And I don't know if that's, I think that's, yeah, they tally everything that gets shipped, and I think it was $7.99 the last full month of numbers that were released.
I don't know if John Jackson Miller's filtering out variants or not, and if he's including things that are not comics. I don't know. He may be doing it either way. I just haven't checked.
Yeah, it was a quick glance, so
yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. I'm pretty sure trades were a different column.
Either way, it's a staggering amount of content coming out. And again, that's part of why I do these episodes, the preview spotlight, etc. It's so easy for somebody to miss something they'd be interested in, simply because it just doesn't hit their radar through the onslaught of everything else coming out. But it is kind of funny at times when even the creators aren't aware of just the competition they're up against and how fierce it is just through the number of options.
Yeah, I mean, there's a top 300 that's released, so you know it's more than 200, right? You got to know that.
This month and last, it was 500 items.
Oh, okay.
And that includes reorder activity, but there's also stuff below that they could pull in. So we're not at a point where there's a shortage of options. One could argue there's a shortage of sales at times, but that's another issue. So if you've got strong thoughts either way or other suggestions on like the preview spotlight and how to handle the dupes and stuff, let me know. Otherwise, I'm probably at this point just keeping them all in there. And I know as I say that, somebody is going to be sending in like 15 clips for the same item one month just because they could. And if you've got 15 different clips that are entertaining, I may play them all. I may not. So with that, we've got the comic page teleconference coming up on, let's see, after this episode goes up. That would have been February 17th. Yeah, after this. The next preview spotlight deadline will be March 10th, that bright and early, that Saturday morning, or at least as early as I get going. If you need a little bit more time, don't sweat it. But just let me know that they're coming so I can plan accordingly. And then March 17th will be the teleconference for that month. Just so you guys know, and part of why I'm in favor of keeping the different clips, I've gotten to where I'm editing that episode by groups of clips per person. So even if I've got three clips for the same thing, a significant time may elapse between me listening to the first and the last of them. Just because I find I tend to have to do the same sort of audio adjustments or whatever to each person's clips, unique to them versus somebody else. So there have been a couple of times I hadn't quite realized until I assembled the whole thing. Oh yeah, there are three of these clips. But, you know, hey, it happens. To me, it means that a lot of people are excited about the stuff. And I think that's good too. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Sideways number 1 from DC, Star Wars Thrawn number 1 from Marvel, and Invincible number 144 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.